This is William Fink. It's September 6th, 2010, and this is the Christogenia Open Forum. It's been a long weekend. I've got a lot of work to do. I shouldn't complain. I have one email from my challenge to all the people who did not, who will not accept two-seed line in Britain. One email from a Dutch woman out of my challenge in last month's New Ensign. I thought it was pretty interesting. Maybe if it gets a little slow later on, I'll have something to read. Right now, a few people requested to talk. Last week, I played Braveheart before the program began, and I think it put everybody to sleep. I have to find some decent music to start this program with, maybe. Just because it sets the tone. So I tried to look for something livelier tonight, right? Hello, Bob. Hello, Bruce.
Hello, Bill.
Anybody wants to talk, this is an open forum program. On last week's program, I had no patience for carrying a program myself. In last week's program, I had nothing lined up, and nobody wanted to talk. And if it's an open forum. If nobody wants to talk, I can't have a program. That's the way it is. So if anybody wants to talk, right-click your name and request to talk, and I'll turn your microphone on. Hello, Bruce, you there? I guess not. How you doing, Bob?
Okay. You know, I thought I'd bring up this slave trade topic. I don't know if you've covered that before on one of these programs. And specifically, there's a lot of talk that goes around about how black slave trade was done by the Jews, which seems to be, there's a lot of evidence that substantiates that. However, it does allow Israelites in the Old Testament to have slaves or bond servants, and I'm kind of wondering, that's one of those things that I've had some questions about. Well, when it comes to slavery, is that a correct thing to do now? Essentially, we in the U.S. right now are somewhat of slaves to the banking system. So in a kind of reverse way, we've ended up being back in Egypt again. But I'm kind of wondering, just with application to true Israelites.
Well, you know, there's no moral problem with slavery. That if you're a slave, it's because Yahweh wants you to be a slave. If you're a free man, it's because Yahweh's granted you freedom. Men don't understand that. We don't see it that way, but that's because we don't study our Bibles. And Peter and Paul both in their writings, and Christ himself, all upheld the Greco-Roman institution of slavery, which really wasn't bad. And what we're absolutely ignorant of today is that anybody who works for a wage is a slave. That's what the definition of a slave was in the ancient world. Somebody who worked for somebody else in exchange for his wages and sustenance.
So is this another word we've changed the definition of? Because from the perspective today, slave is more of an abusive thing.
Well, right, but that's the Jewish propaganda that's done that to us. Slaves in Rome owned slaves. Slaves in Rome owned property. They owned property and slaves of their own. Very, very often. Not all of them did, but the ones who actually worked and were fortunate enough to have wealthy masters and worked and earned their trust were in turn earned enough money, and they were also slaves in Rome, were also able to operate their own businesses on the side.
Okay, so I'm thinking of Leviticus 25, right around the 40s. Talks about having a bond servant, but it can't be of your own people. What does that necessarily mean? I mean, are these are white slaves, correct?
Well, right, but the Israelites weren't really supposed to hold each other as slaves. They were told not to do that, because that's really not brotherly love, is it?
Well, who were they holding as slaves?
The other Adamic peoples would have all been legitimate slaves. Slave trading was a very... And they held the Canaanites as slaves. In bondage. Solomon had the Canaanites as slaves, and the northern tribes had Canaanites as slaves for probably right up to the Assyrian deportations.
Okay.
Now what's wrong is when we free them and intermingle with them. That's what's wrong. That's morally wrong.
But I'm having a tough time with why would you have slaves of a race that's going to be the demise of you.
Well, right. I'm not saying it's a healthy thing to have them, right? But there's nothing morally wrong. There's no moral stricture in the Bible against it. And it's even a matter of prophecy that Canaan would be a servant of servants and a race of slaves. And that they were during the kingdom period of Israel.
But now the roles are reversed.
Well, the roles are reversed in fulfillment of other prophecies and as a result of our sin. That's why the roles are reversed.
I guess what I'm trying to get to here is, I mean, when slavery is brought up, it's another word that's lost its definition. That's what I'm kind of getting out of this conversation.
Well, right. It didn't always have a negative connotation. In ancient history, it was never a good thing to be sold into slavery, but it was a common thing that occurred, and in the Bible, it often had a neutral connotation. It didn't have a negative connotation. And many slaves were very well treated in Greece and Rome. I'm not saying that there weren't slaves that weren't abused. There certainly were. But many slaves were very well treated.
Well, this gets down to what Gerald was talking about in the South. Now, I don't know what the Jews did when they owned slaves, but he was saying there were many families that had slaves.
There were black families that had slaves. There were pretty wealthy black families that had slaves. They were lucky enough to become free families in the 16, early 1700s and became land and slaveholders.
Well, some of the stats I saw, there was several thousand times higher probability that a Jew would have a slave or a black slave than a white would. Very, very few whites in the U.S. owned slaves.
Well, the stats I've seen tell me that about 2% of white southern males held slaves.
And the rest were Jews.
Well, yes, they were held by Jews or blacks, right? But a very small population were actually slaveholders. Now whites have been slaves, as Alex just mentioned. Under feudalism, most of our people were enslaved to their lords. It was not an unhealthy kind of slavery most of the time, but some of the time it was.
Well, it seems to me that what's going on today is worse than the slavery itself. I mean, you have these just cesspools like Detroit, Philadelphia, pick any major city, of class of people that once were slaves that are now in worse shape because their lives are getting destroyed and they end up in prison all the time. They're as lost as we are without a master.
Well, yes, they are. They're a lot more or less without a master. Without the only thing, and that's because the only thing the other races really understand is force. They don't understand laws. They have no laws written on their hearts. They have no spiritual moral guidance. They only really understand force when it comes down to it. And that's my personal experience. That it's the rule of the jungle. That's how they've lived.
It was a question I couldn't answer. I had people saying, you know, well, what about slavery? And the question was applicable to, if the whites really are true Israel, then why were you holding slaves? What's the difference between that and the Jewish slave trade?
Well, right. Well, the thing is that there's no moral injunction against holding slaves, except for slaves of your own kinsmen, right? And there's no even though we know from experience, it's not a good thing.
Well, now, I mean, it, essentially today, isn't it all the white races are kinsmen, or no? Am I missing something there?
Well, you know, all the true whites are kinsmen, and should count each other as kinsmen, even when we're not sure who's a Japhethite and who's an Israelite, and there's a lot of Japhethites living amongst us, and those lines are not. Yet, you know, a lot of people like to clearly draw those lines across. Yeah, you know, dividing Saxon and Slav, but that's not a good a good distinction all the time. I can demonstrate very well in history that there are many Saxon tribes with Slavic languages right now, and many Slavs that call themselves Germans, and that's just one example, right?
Yeah, it just fascinates me that the Jews have been so successful at every little tiny bit of propaganda that they've done over the years, and the slave trade is just another one.
Well, we should treat all white men as brothers until we learn that they're not worthy. We should always give the white man the benefit of the doubt. Christ said, by their fruits you will know them, right?
Yes.
And sometimes by their big hook noses we know them a lot sooner. But we should always give our fellow white man the benefit of the doubt until they prove that they're not worthy to be our brothers. And we're to put unrepentant wrongdoers out of our community, right?
Exactly.
And we should, you know, a Christian really shouldn't want to hold the slave. It's property that's not needed. It's never going to get you entrance into the kingdom of heaven, right? But if we look at slavery, the Roman terms of slavery in the first century, at the time of Christ, and we look at the corporatism, the corporate wage earner of today, I don't see a distinction. There's no distinction.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, that's kind of the... I've had a friend tell me that. He says, all we are is slaves to the...
Well, it's absolutely true. There's no distinction.
Yeah, I mean, you're taken off the streets to work in these cubicles during the day so that the Jews can go out and play.
Right. Absolutely. There's absolutely no distinction. If you have to earn a wage, to make your way in life, you're a slave.
Yeah, but
a free man has 20 acres and uses it, or 10 acres, and supports himself with it.
Yeah, so there's very few freemen.
Well, there's a lot fewer with the property tax structure that's coming to this country since the Jews took over our economic system. And there were property taxes in the 1800s, but they weren't anything like they are now.
They're absolutely horrific. I was even looking at farmland. They're even ridiculous on farmland now.
Right.
Even if you're permitted to farm.
Right. Right. They're trying to sew up every angle to keep us all enslaved. They're trying to block the entrance to heaven, right? Aren't we told that's what they do? Well, that they've stopped up more and more of it and more of it until it's totally stopped up.
Well, I feel horrifically bad now. I have slaves.
Well, if you're an employer, you do have slaves. But you're also an employee, so... Your own company, so you're also a slave.
Yeah, I'm an employee of the government too. So
yeah, you're an employee of the government, but you're even with your own company, you're a slave to the people that you've your partner. You have responsibilities to him. You collect a wage from your own company, and you have responsibility to your contract. Yeah, you know, the people you contract with, and if you don't show up to work tomorrow, you're not going to get paid, and that's basically. It is a yoke.
I may even have to go into sensitivity training talking to you.
Well, that's it. We're all slaves. If we're wage earners, we're slaves. That's the way it is. And if you don't believe you're a slave, well, don't pay your property taxes next month. Because the true free man is independent. We haven't had any nemesis for 200 years. Bruce, your reception is terrible.
Is he in his truck?
Obviously, yes.
Okay. I didn't know if he was sitting at a... All right, well, that's good. Is there anything that you can think of on your site that goes over some of the aspects of slaves and stuff like that? I mean, I can read the biblical stuff. Well, there's
not offhand. I mean, I've spoke before about slavery in Rome, but I don't think I ever wrote anything about it.
How about Clifton?
No, I doubt if he's ever written anything about it.
Huh.
I think, you know, if I wrote anything about it, it's in William Fink versus the Paul Bashers, right?
Okay. All right, well, I'm glad.
Because I remember that topic coming up in the debates concerning Paul. It's in sections 24, 25, 26, 27 of the Douglas debate, William Fink versus the Paul Bashers. I wrote about slavery. I don't remember what I wrote about it, but I wrote about it. Christianity respects property rights. And Paul said, if anybody is born a slave, he should remain a slave and seek to do well. However, if you have the opportunity to purchase your way out of slavery legitimately, you should take that opportunity. And that's Paul's advice. And as we saw the other day, in the 2 Peter program in chapters 4 and 5, I'm sorry, 3 and 4 of 1 Peter, I'm sorry, that Peter also upheld the institution of slavery. Because it was a fact of life in Rome and Greece, and Christianity recognizes the rights of property holders, even though as good Christians, we should want to share as much of our property as we can with our brethren. That's Christianity. That's the way
I remember where there was actually, if you could be a bond servant and then actually choose as an honor to be with that family for life. I don't remember where that is in the Bible. But.
Well, in the Old Testament, if you had, what would happen is if you lost your property or if you were put out of your inheritance or something, you basically had to become somebody else's slave to survive, right? There's no standing army in Israel. You can't join. There is no police force. The people are the police force. Just like this country started out. There is no standing army. The people are the militia. That's the way it's supposed to be. So where are you going to go? You can't flee to get a job with the military. Yet you either go into piracy or you become somebody's slave when you have no property, right? That's basically the only two choices. So if you're a noble man, you're not going to really go into piracy. You're not going to deprive others because of your misfortune. So you're going to go work for Harry. Harry has a 200-acre farm, and you're going to say, Harry, maybe I shouldn't use that name. It sounds too Jewish, huh? How about Joe? And you're going to say, Joe, I have to become your bondsman. I have to become your servant. And that's because I don't have any means of supporting myself. And Joe will say, yeah, okay, I got a spot for you. And you have to serve me for 7 years. That was usually the agreement, right? That was the traditional agreement. And you would serve Joe for 7 years. Now, in that 7 years, if you made enough money or gained some skills or something where you could strike out on your own, well, that's fine. And the Bible had laws that you had to leave your wife and children behind if Joe supplied you with a wife and children, right? Yeah, you had to leave them behind. They were Joe's. That's the biblical law. That might sound nuts to us, but that's the way of Yahweh. Now, if you didn't want to leave at that point, you would and say you were given a wife and children by Joe, and you did love them, and you didn't want to leave them. You would go to Joe and say, "Hey, Joe, look, I can't leave. You're a good employer, and." You gave me a good wife, and I love her, and my kids, and I can't leave. Well, then the law is that Joe would poke a hole in your ear, and you're his. You're his. You've sold yourself forever. So that's the Old Testament law.
Well, you know what's fascinating about this is even the Jews have gotten, not like they've gotten in between a man and a woman with the marriage laws. They've also gotten in between a man and bond servants or slaves. All these labor laws and all this horse manure is basically making the employee the slave.
Well, the thief can't steal your property until he devises a way to separate it from you, right?
Yeah.
And if you really look at all the Jewish laws we've passed in this country in 100 years, over whether it be property or whether it be wives or whether it be relationships between parents and children, all these laws are devised so that the Jew could easily separate the white man from his property. And the white man falls for it every time.
And extract money while he's doing it. Divorce
lawyer. Well, of course.
Property lawyer. Trust lawyer.
Right. Well, when in the Saxon common law, you could never separate a man from his real estate. Period. If the man owned land, you could. It didn't matter what debt you had. You couldn't take it from him. So that the man was never separated from his primary source of sustenance. That's the old English common law before the Jews, before the shetar became the law of England. And the man in the old English common law was the absolute lord over his wife and children. And that's where we get the, you know where the saying rule of thumb comes from? Yeah, you could beat your wife as much as you wanted, as long as it was with a stick not any bigger than your thumb. That's the rule of thumb. And your kids too. They were in total subjection to you. And the Jew separated us from the authoritarian family structure, which is what our race followed for how many centuries? 70 centuries. But the Jew was separated us from that.
The kids are totally out of control today. I see too many
wars. Well, that's why. He who spares the rod hates his son.
They don't.
That's in Proverbs a couple of times.
I just had a family over here, and I was appalled. I told them flat out to their face. I said, this is ridiculous. You know, if it was my kid, I'd beat the hell out of them.
Yeah, well, you know, my son, after after we were reunited after 15 years apart, right, he told me, you were hard on me when I was young. So I told him, well, look at how you turned out. You turned out the way you turned out because I was hard on you when you were young. And I quoted that scripture. He who spares the rod hates his son. And it's true, and it works every time.
Yep.
Now my other sons, who were a lot younger when I went away, they all turned out to be assholes, for the most part. I mean, they didn't turn out anything like my oldest son, who was actually a noble young man.
Well, these guys, these Jews seem to take it, it's just flabbergasting. They almost as if they studied our own scriptures more than we do, and figure out exactly how to do something that's just diametrically opposed to every single precept.
Well, that's what the Talmud's all about. When you read the Talmud, I've read the commentaries on the biblical law in the Talmud. And when you read them, it's very obvious right off. I mean, you don't have to read much to find this out, that these commentaries exist so that the Jews can rationalize their way around every facet of the biblical law. And wherever they go, that's what they bring. Wherever the Africans go, they bring Africa, right? Well, wherever the Jews go, they bring systemized lawlessness. That's what it is. And whenever they get in charge, that they create a system of lawlessness that looks legal, that looks legitimate, and it's absolutely not.
Oh, yeah, what we have today is complete anarchy. I don't think there's too many that can dispute that.
Well, it's an organized sort of anarchy, but, right, it is practically anarchy. Come on, guys. If anybody wants to talk, let me turn your microphone on. This is an open house. It might be another 30-minute program. What? I'm sorry,
can I,
Robert.
Go to another topic?
Sure.
Because this thing's got me curious here. This is, and someone else is going to have to pipe in on this one because I don't think you know a lot about this. But and I don't remember we were talking the other day about Jerry Lee Lewis, who ended
right.
up marrying.
I don't know a lot about this.
No, but I want to get into this because this to me is the epitome of what the Jews end up doing. It's like an incestuous thing it's almost like an octopus in all kinds of different directions of deception. So you got Jerry Lee Lewis, who marries his cousin, Mayor, I guess the name was. Then you find out that their cousins, Billy Graham, who used to be named Frank. And it turns out that Jimmy Swagger just happens to be a cousin. And then it turns out that Elvis Presley just happens to be a cousin.
But doesn't that prove what we say about them all the time?
But
what we always say that they promote each other, they know each other, they promote each other, and they put each other in every position that they could put each other in. That's what they do.
But doesn't anybody look at these backgrounds of these people before they go out saying, you know, Billy Graham's out there and Jimmy Swaggart's up on stage crying?
Well, no, because if you investigated the other cousins, you'd probably find some media magnates, some newspaper writers that promoted these people, that talked them up in all their columns early in their careers, and the domino effect turned them into quote-unquote stars. And because the newspapers all talk them up and the radio stations all talk them up, people become interested and go to see them, and before you know it, so and so is attracting crowds of 20,000 people, and this guy's attracting crowds of 20,000 people. That it's a crime ring. That's what crime rings do.
But it's
we don't think like they do. If you want to hire a pastor for your local church and you're an influential man, you're going to look for what you think is the best man for the job. You're not going to look for Jaime Shlomo's cousin. Yeah, you know, I'm going to hire him because he's Shlomo's cousin. And Shlomo told me to hire him, or I may not get my next auto loan. That's the way they work. They're an organized crime ring let loose on our nation. We let them loose.
Just fascinates me though that it goes so far back. I just am amazed.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you'd probably be able to get it right back to the Reconstruction period, and it's never ended since, and maybe further back than that, if you go into New York and Boston.
I mean, it's I can see where it's obvious. I mean, if you flip through the TV today, you can just basically pick out Jew after Jew after Jew after Jew. But it also makes you wonder now what they're going to do to even circumvent some of the other stuff that's going on, like the YouTube stars. So now are they just going to start picking out Jews off of YouTube, only the Jews?
Well, they pick the Jew haters off of YouTube. That they do away with a lot of videos that we'd like to see stay there, and some of them they shut down pretty darn quick, and I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of those so-called YouTube stars weren't Jews.
I wouldn't be either at this point. I mean, just looking at this, I just didn't expect.
I don't cruise YouTube. Yeah, you know, I'm not an expert at YouTube, but it wouldn't surprise me.
Well, if they can't, you know, the other option there, though, is find someone with talent on YouTube and then you exploit them, get them on drugs and whatever perversion can in Hollywood.
Look at what we read last night out of Nesta Webster, where Bismarck expelled all the Jew socialists from Germany, and they all showed up in New York City, and they were all pulling the same crap in New York City they were pulling in Germany, and they organized it within 2 years. And they started franchises in Detroit and Chicago.
I don't understand where they get the energy to do this nonsense. It's just so unbelievable.
Because it's what they do. It's what they're gifted to do.
It's like a
rush. It's what is in their genes. Why do you get up and think about circuit boards and transistors and resistors?
I have a hard time believing that's in my genes, too.
Well, no, but it's the creative and the investigative talents are in your genes. And you just happen to have a liking for electronics, so that's where you direct those energies. Well, they have criminal genes, and they like money and anarchy and sedition and socialism and the overthrow of governments and the destruction of society. So that's where they focus their energy.
But it seems they like those areas more than the whites like areas that we're supposed to like.
Well, yeah, you know, today that might be true, but I mean, when you go back to the end of the 1800s and the early 1900s, well, look at the early 1900s. How many car companies sprung up because a lot of hobbyists loved building cars? And car company, there were like 40, 50 car companies in New York manufacturing automobiles. Never mind the ones in Michigan and Pennsylvania. And they were all started. Look at all the computer companies that started up early on. And of course, you have your winners and your losers. But look at all this this entire software industry that blossomed in 10 years by a bunch of bedroom hobbyists. Even Bill Gates was a hobbyist. He was studying to be a damn lawyer. He's part Jew, but he's one of them. He's one of those garage. Look at Hewlett Packard. That was started in a garage. They were building oscillators in the 40s. At one time, white men did focus their energies in the places where their creative skills caused them to succeed. We don't do that anymore, or at least very few of us do it, because most of us are too busy out worshiping the Jewish gods that the Jews have set up, all the idols the Jews have set up in our society, and they've led us away.
Yeah, my hobbies almost died now. Amateur radio, ham radio.
Yeah, right. And that was another where the smarter white men, yeah, you know, another hobby that attracted intelligent white men, aside from automotives and computers.
Bill Gates, he's a piece of work. I love that little video that talks about where he talks about how he's going to help reduce the world's population through healthcare and vaccination.
Well, right. That should ring a lot of bells, especially since he just bought $1 million worth of Monsanto, right? He wants to reduce the world's population, and he's buying up food companies. What does that tell you?
He's going to genetically modify the food. Well, he won't. Somebody will. Probably one of our brethren.
Yeah, right. Probably some mad German scientist.
Well, there's a good one in the MacDog in there. White men are too busy cheering on their favorite nigger.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean by the idols that the Jews set up, right? Organized sports,
seems like
Hollywood.
It's like a killjoy, though, Bill. I mean, it's like everything that you once would have considered to be a pleasurable thing, watching a little movie or watching a little show or doing this or that in society, is just completely vain. I mean, it's not even an enjoyment, because right in the middle of it's a kike. Drives you freaking nuts. Can't get away from them. They're like roaches with no exterminator.
Well, right. That's a very good analogy, Robert. Roaches with no exterminator. I'll have to remember that one.
Should I put that down in my little booklet of quotes?
Yeah, that belongs in the book. Alex says the exterminator's on his way. Well, we just can't wait. Well, what's up? His car won't start or something? He should have been here hours ago. That's the biblical challenge, right? The scoffers say, when's Yahweh coming? He says, he's not coming. Well, we can do whatever we want. That's the words of the scoffer. The exterminator will be here, but he'll be here on his time. And we just have to suffer in the meantime.
Well, there's going to be plenty of suffering from what I see, because there is no one awake. We're looking at a board here, what, a couple of people? This is the world? This represents the world of CI?
It seems to.
Incredible.
Well, it surely seems to.
Yeah, those were my two big questions tonight. I just am fascinated with the fact that they've got the religion is just no more than an entertainment aspect. Billy Graham, Jimmy Swaggart. I guess we could probably pick off any number of those televangelists. What was the one that got caught with the big one there?
That was Jimmy Swagger, wasn't it?
Swagger got caught, but there was another one that got caught around the same time that had swindled all kinds of money. He went to jail.
Baker,
there you go, Baker. I wouldn't be surprised to find out he's a Jew.
Well, religion has become an entertainment factor. It's all entertainment, mainstream religion.
Well, Judeo-Christianity, so-called, is the Jew fits right into that. They're not doing anything that's not right in with their religious beliefs. It's perfect.
Well, they bought it. They bought it in the end of the 1800s with the, I can't even think of their names right now. That's how much I detest them. Cyrus Schofield and that other clown. That James Bullinger. It's not James Bullinger. It's some I.E. Bullinger. I forget what the I stands for.
Well, you get right down to it, and it is just without a shadow of a doubt, they are wolves in the sheep's den. There's just no question about it. I mean, because every time you start looking at this, they're it's just another door that opens, and there's another Jew behind it.
Well, when you go to a so-called Christian bookstore, and you look on a shelf at Bibles, and all you see is Bullinger and Schofield and even newer Bibles, like that Billy Graham Bible, that's absolutely horrible, that Living Bible. And don't imagine that you see them there because they're good Christian books. Imagine that you see them there because the Jew owns the store, the Jew owns the printing house, and that's exactly what the Jew wants there.
Yeah, but you can't write this in a book, Bill.
No, because it won't get published.
Even if it did, no one would believe it.
Right. It's just like television and radio. The Jew is, you know, he's come to control all these great resources. He's not going to let anybody use these resources in a manner that might be detrimental to his interests. You don't think that's going to happen. That ain't going to happen. The Jew ain't going to let a $500 million an hour television network be used in a manner that's detrimental to the Jew's interests.
Yeah, they shut Jim Condit down. That was actually pretty funny with his political ads where he attacked Chertoff. Violated their own laws to shut him down.
They do it all the time. Well, Condit's usually a clown anyway. He thinks Hitler was a Jew.
Yeah, he's not all there either. But his I'll tell you what, if you listen to some of his commercials that he had on the radio for running for Congress, they were hilarious. He just went right for the jugular, and then they shut his ads off the air.
Gary Condit or Jim Condit? I think Jim Condit.
That's Jim Condit. Jim Condit Jr.
Yeah, Gary Condit's the clown from California that got caught with somebody's panties in his pocket or something. That ain't the way it happened, but he's the one that got caught up in a sex scandal or something. But this is Jim Condit. He's from Ohio. Municker, what's going on?
Well, I got in late.
What have you done that's useful this week?
Well, short week.
All my weeks are short. I swear there are only 3 days.
Really?
Saturday, Sunday, and Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. 4 days, all my weeks, I swear.
Yeah. And everything else was squeezed in between. I was looking at on the internet, and one of the sites I go to, it talked about how the Graf Spee, which is one of the Germans' pocket battleships during the Second World War, got cornered down there. The Germans had never, apparently, they had never been a sea-going people. Kaiser Wilhelm said that we Germans are a landlubber, a people of landlubber, or something like that. You know, they didn't do well at the sea. And they would send ships out, sometimes very poorly protected. And the Graf Spee was one of them. He got down there near Uruguay, and the English knew that they were going there because they got their spies everywhere. So they cornered the ship. So the captain of the Graf Spee took the ship into Montevideo and then unloaded the crew and whatever else they had to take out there. And then with a handful of people, he went back out there and then scuttled the ship right there, set it on fire or something like that, and down it went. You know, without even putting up a fight, because what's the sense in it, you know, losing all that manpower. But they also lost a super expensive battleship. It was just a small battleship. So I was fishing around online. I found a bunch of Der Spiegel pictures of how they found the wreckage of the Graf Spee, and they braced up the on the fantail, I guess that's the back of the ship. He had this big Nazi eagle with a swastika under its claws, you know?
Right, and I have a picture of the masthead from the Graf Spee somewhere.
Oh, yeah? Well, this is something from the back. And so they raised it up, but in all political correctness, they took a little wrap of paper and covered over the swastika so that nobody would see it.
Yeah, we wouldn't want to offend a Jew.
No, not certainly not. So I'm putting up pictures now with the sources on them, and some black and white, some color. And they got a computer version. I'm surprised they don't have more of the computer pictures. I don't know why I don't, but they had several of them. I'll have to look again and see what they did with them. But they're like the underwater camera of computerized pictures of it laying on its side and the guns pointing up. But that's what I'm doing right now. I'm going to finish that. And I got a bunch of about 50 images off of the Life magazine last night. Well, I was listening to the Sword Brethren show. Well, that way I can work and listen at the same time. So I'm putting those up tonight. That's really my latest effort there. Pretty dull stuff, unless you like it.
Well, somebody has to do it, right?
Really? Nobody else is dumb enough. I mean, nobody else is smart enough. Gotta watch out.
How are you doing with your book? Have you made any progress? I've been trying to leave you alone.
I got a call from Girelli as a question. I have to call him up again. I'll listen to my voice, my email, answering machine, and find out what he has to say. The only thing I have for him is how to get those videos up. I just don't understand how to do it. I tried duplicating what others did, but I can't see how they did it. So sometime I'll have to call you.
The video upload's pretty easy.
It may be, but I haven't been able to see it. There's no actual video. Like on Create Content, there's no video, there's audio and such.
No, but right on a page or a story, there's a button that says Upload Video. Press the button, you pick the video off your computer, you scroll down the bottom, you hit Save. After you give it a title, you have to give every note a title.
I'll go there real quick. This is Dixie. Dixie's different than the ones I've ever worked with.
It's all right, that's the same. It might be in a different place, but it's there. Okay, this is an open forum program. I hope somebody wants to talk. Can't have an open forum with one participant, or two. Not for too long, anyway. Well, I got to go over this letter from Holland. I'm going to answer this probably this weekend. To the editor, meaning the editor of the New Ensign, question one, if Cain is seed from the devil, what does Eve saying, I have gotten a man with the help of the Lord, in Genesis 4:2 mean? Now, this is a question that Clifton and I have both answered 100 times. Genesis 4:2 is a corrupt verse. It's demonstrably corrupt. There are mainstream scholars that admit it's corrupt, and there are several examples in very, very early Christian literature and in the Aramaic Targums that prove it's corrupt because they try to supply the missing words. Question 2. Aren't angels and demons spiritual beings? Isn't it so that spiritual beings cannot procreate, as they do not carry seed like us humans? They may sometimes take the appearance of humans, but they cannot procreate. Where does she see this in the Bible? The only place that any such thing is in the Bible is in the Gospel, where Christ said that in the kingdom of heaven we'll be like the angels of heaven and not marry. But that doesn't mean that we can't procreate. And that was spoken of the angels in heaven, not the angels that fall to earth. So that's an example of somebody conjecturing Scripture and imagining something on their own, because it's not written in Scripture anywhere. It's amazing to me that in Genesis chapter 6, nobody wants to doubt that angels came down and had sex with women and created people, the giants. But in Genesis chapter 3, people want to deny it. Question number 3. Satan, as a creation of God, has created the beasts of the field. And the Canaanite, Edomite, Jew does this. Does this mean that God is only half creator and he has got limited power? No, that's not what it means. It means that we have free will and we have just as much ability to screw up as we have to do good. But we don't blame our mistakes on God. So she's wrong again. Question number 4. 1 Corinthians 15:28 states that, at the very end, everything is subjected to him, and then the Son himself will also subject himself to the Father who put all things under him, so that God may be all in all. Let's go to the Christogene New Testament and see what this verse really says, because I hate trying to interpret the confounded King James translation. That might sound arrogant. I won't make an excuse. 15:27, therefore all things are subjected under his feet. Now until it may be said that it is evident that all things have been subjected, parentheses, Paul's making a parenthetical statement here where he says, because outside of the subjecting of all things to himself, and until all things are in subjection to him, then also the Son of himself will be subjected in the subjecting of all things to himself. In other words, the Son himself is enslaved to the task of subjecting all things to himself. That's what Paul's saying there. It's a very rhetorical discourse. Then also the Son himself will be subjected in the subjecting of all things to himself, in order that Yahweh may be all things among all. Yes, Yahshua Christ is going to subject all to himself. All the things that belong to Yahweh. Yahshua said elsewhere, every plant that my heavenly Father has not planted shall be rooted up. Yahshua also said that all of the enemies of Yahweh will go into the lake of fire. She is not considering those verses. What does all in all mean? Just Israelites? If that is the case, are all the other peoples who were non-Israelites, Jews, heathen, blacks, Chinese, Indians, etc., doomed? I would say yes. There are only two races in the world, sheep and goats. Yahshua tells us who the sheep is, and Yahshua tells us who the goats are. If you're not a sheep, by necessity, you're a goat. Matthew chapter 25, at the end, the goats go into the lake of fire. That's the way it is. Yahweh did not create the goats. They are every plant which my heavenly Father has not planted. So yes, the goats are doomed. That's a fact of Scripture. Question number 5. Do you believe in ultimate reconciliation? I look forward to your reply. Yes, I believe in the ultimate reconciliation of all Israel with Yahweh, and the reconciliation of the Adamic race with Yahweh, and a restoration of Yahweh's original creation and the kingdom of heaven on earth. If that's what you want to call ultimate reconciliation, then I believe in it. That's scriptural. But if you want to think that half-breeds, bastards, mamzers, the children of the devil, the adversary, and all these other things should be reconciled to Yahweh, well, that's not scriptural. Because every plant that my heavenly Father has not planted shall be rooted up. The tares shall be rooted up. What happens to them? They're cast into the fire. That's scriptural. Now, that might be ultimate reconciliation, too. Because everything that's adverse to Yahweh and to His original creation is going to return from whence it came. It came from nothing but the imaginations of man, and it's going back to nothing, period. So that's how I plan on answering her. And I'll probably think of a few other things to say before then, but I just thought I'd run that down. Because that ultimate reconciliation doctrine comes up a lot, and people say, oh, God can do anything. God can save Negroes. God could save Chinamen. God can save Jews. Who the hell would want to save any of that? We're told who God created. God created Adam. God did not create bastards. We cannot blame Yahweh for our mistakes. We cannot expect Him to accept our errors. He can forgive our errors, but He's not going to accept our errors. There's a huge difference.
Just like we can't blame Paul for the Catholic Church.
If some Jew puts fish genes in a tomato, thinking he's making a better tomato, I guess these people would want God to accept that tomato. That's an abomination. And Monsanto's doing that very thing. And it's an abomination. And if you want to put Adamic genes into a monkey, you can't expect Yahweh to accept the results of your mating with a monkey.
You know, that does, about the gene thing, I kind of wonder how many plants are out there right now that are just ones that are destructive that were created at some point in the past by gene manipulation.
Well, you know something? This is the truth. I read in the Wall Street Journal years ago, maybe 10, 12 years ago, that they were trying to put haddock genes in tomatoes to make the skins tougher so that the tomatoes would do better in transit and the Jew would make more profit from the tomato train.
I have no doubt about that.
I've seen some genetic things where they've taken some human DNA, put it in some vegetables for some reason or another. I don't remember now what it was.
Because the Jews are obsessed with corrupting the creation of Yahweh. They've been obsessed with it from the beginning, and race mixing is their first... That was their first method of doing that. Well, it doesn't work fast enough. So now they just want to create laboratory species that are unnatural and repulsive.
And that could be the recessive gene that happened tens of thousands of years ago or whatever. Huh?
Well, I'm sure that same... Yeah, you know, the corrupt mind wants to corrupt everything, right? Mm-hmm. That's the way it is. The corrupt mind sees everything as corrupt. The corrupt man sees everything as being corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jew, because he's corrupted, he everything, every operation that he undertakes, it is an operation of corruption. Whether it be corruption of an economy, corruption of the minds of young boys, corruption of the bodies of young girls, he's going to corrupt it. If he lays a hand on it, he's corrupting it. You've seen a rabbi, you've already seen a crime.
You know what's interesting, though, too, Bill, about just the Jew in general. I mean, I don't get the impression that the Mexicans or the blacks are all with it, what the Jews up to either. I mean, the whites are the most blind, but those groups don't seem to be completely in on the plan.
Well, you know, the biggest writers on the Jewish role in the slave trade is the Nation of Islam and the secret relationship between blacks and Jews, right?
Absolutely. I remember reading that book.
But what the black man doesn't understand is if it weren't for the Jew, he'd have never laid his eyes on our daughters. He'd still be back there in a jungle, living in a mud hut or a dung hut.
Well, that's ultimately what's going to happen. And that's assuming that you're wrong and that they're not just completely alien to the planet.
That is the least that's going to happen.
Well, all the mixed breeds are going to be gone.
Well, absolutely. They're definitely not planted by Yahweh. And if you look at the history of China, that's most Asians, if not all. And they're the original servant worshippers. and the Jew is the serpent.
So
there's
got to
be a relationship there.
You're so mean.
Hello, Isaiah. Hello.
Hello. Do you hear me?
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, okay. Okay. I haven't listened to what you have to say. It's kind of interesting. About Genesis 4, I think I got to realize that the Bible says that Adam knew his wife, Cain, in Genesis 4. But Genesis 5, he begat Seth. That's how come... Hello?
Yeah, you're dropping out a little bit.
Oh, really? I'm listening to you, and everyone's been dropping out. Can't be my set, because I just got myself a hub.
But it's got to be your internet connection, I would think. That happened to you last week, too.
Okay. I don't know why he's doing that. Well,
it's the Jew. He's after you.
It could be.
The Jewish gremlins.
It could be the Jews homing in on your conversation and driving out certain things.
That's right.
It can't happen.
You obviously haven't paid your troll fee.
Drops out. Well, yeah. That's true. But Adam, because Adam didn't begat him. Like he begat Seth as well as... hello? Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Isaiah, you're dropping out. I'm sorry. I don't know why you're doing... This was happening to you last week, too. I mean, there's no feedback. That's a great thing, but you're dropping out.
Wonder if my... No. That might be my telephone connection. I got the satellite thing on my telephone.
What do you have a satellite connection to? Everybody that comes here with a satellite connection is screwed.
Well, right. I got Clear Internet, and they attach the... maybe we'll have to go to AT&T.
Somebody else had a problem with that, too. They had the satellite. Whenever the weather was bad, raining...
Gerald has a problem with it. Michael has a problem. Avenger has a problem. Steven has problems sometimes, but a lot less than the others.
Maybe we'll go back to AT&T. It's only like $19 a month for a year for the Internet.
Yeah, I would consider it, because this is terrible. I mean, you're clear when you come through, and there's no feedback now, which is a big plus, but you'll speak a sentence, and we're losing 4 or 5 words out of the middle, and we can't determine what you said.
Pasta. Okay, I'm going to have to do that.
Hello, Steven.
Hey, how you doing?
Wonderful. What do you have for us tonight?
I don't know.
Well, you must have had something you thought you had to say. I mean,
you sure that.
I had it and it went. Hello, Bill. It's Bruce. Hi, Stephen. Jennifer. Bob.
Howdy.
Hello, Bruce.
Hi. You know that that very subject talking about the vermin that weren't created by Yahweh. Any amount of sentimentality. And you know, in the white race, will breed a type of an abhorrence and violence towards one's own kind. You know, that sentimentality that doesn't really see the truth of Yahweh's original creation, and obviously, Bob was talking about being a slave earlier, and being a slave to the Jew makes us twice the child of hell as the Jew. You know what I mean? It's that sentimentality, that feeling sympathy for what's false. That's being a slave. And that's what ascribes us that title as a whore in Revelation.
Well, there's a lot of reasons why we're a whore. We're a whore because we accept the enemies of Yahweh. If we didn't embrace the Jew, we would never have become the whore. So Yahweh must have foreseen this. I mean, it's he that wrote that Satan would be let out of the pit for a short time to deceive all the Israel nations, right? And that's what's going on today, and we can demonstrate in history and prophecy that that's what's going on today. But we can't blame God for it. We did it.
No, exactly, yeah. Well, it speaks of burning the whore in the end. So those who come out of being a whore will actually burn the whore, right? Does that make sense?
Well, right. The whole system's going to go up in smoke, and if you're part of it, you're going to go with it. That doesn't mean that if you're an Israelite that your soul won't be preserved, but your
so if you saved
your,
as,
your body is definitely going to suffer more in this life.
As through fire, you know.
Oh yeah, talking about slavery, it's actually a pretty good thing. Say you know, you get into a lot of debt and stuff, having, and you don't have no money and stuff, having everything you got taken away from you, you could actually go into slavery and work it off.
That sounds like the banks.
And the Jew dish of the Jews, El God, the judicial. There's no justice in a Jew.
Hello, Avenger. Or maybe he didn't want to talk.
He's afraid he's going to be sent to Hades.
Well, I mean, if he comes on breaking up, I really can't do much for him. I don't. It seems here, guys that could that they're the most willing to contribute are the guys with the crappiest internet connections, and I can't help that. I mean, I'd love to have Gerald on here talking, but it's satellite. It's a punishment, I guess. Satellite or those mobile AT&T mobile cell phone connections, they're horrible here. I don't know why. This does not use a lot of bandwidth. TeamSpeak does not use a lot of bandwidth. In fact, it's only set for 10 kilobytes per second. And that's not very much bandwidth at all. That's what this channel's set at. I could regulate what a channel's set at, how much bandwidth it's allowed to use. And the maximum is 10 kilobytes per second.
Basically,
now, I'm on cable broadband, and my average upload speed to the internet is 150 kilobytes per second. So 10 kilobytes per second is not much bandwidth at all, right? And if those cell phone and satellite connections can't provide 10 kilobytes per second, and obviously they don't, well, that's pretty sad.
Bill, I have a question.
Hello.
Am I coming through?
So far.
Okay.
As soon as I open my mouth, I swear. Avengers, this isn't working. I'm sorry. It's
he's having fun, maybe.
I know, that's terrible. Avenger, I'm sorry. As soon as you started talking, you weren't coming through anymore. I don't know what happened. It started breaking up right away. I never heard one word of that statement.
Is Avenger satellite also?
Yeah, well, he's on a cell phone. Yeah, you know, it's a little device that they plug into the USB port in their computer, and it connects them to the internet via the cell phone system. And they're terrible. Okay, come on, guys. This is an open forum. Somebody with a decent connection has to have somebody to say. Avenger, Jove is the high god of the Romans. And if you're reading a translation of the Odyssey that says Jove, that's not a very good translation, because Jove is a Roman word, and everywhere in the Greek it would say Zeus. And I hate when they take Greek classics and plaster them with the Roman names that they believe are equivalent, right? I wrote on the word Jove in a document on my website that Clifton actually put together, but that I wrote the conclusion to. So I have it on my website as well as his. And the title of the paper is, Which Is It, Lord or Yahweh? And in the very last paragraphs of that paper, and I'm going to put the link in the forum, it's chrisagania.org/Lord. In the very last paragraphs of that paper, I write on the name Jove. It's actually in the next to last paragraph. And the Encyclopedia Britannica said that one may pass over consideration that the Indo-European deity Jove is equivalent to Yahweh. And I wrote in response that if one may only pass over an attempt to connect Yahweh to the Indo-European deity Jove, it is only because one is attempting to uphold the falsehoods of Jewish and Israelite identity as generally understood. Paul of Tarsus knew better. for which see Romans 1:18. And that's where Paul of Tarsus said that the Romans had the truth of God and changed it into a lie. Among the languages of Europe, the V and the W and the U were often interchanged with one another, and in Hebrew, Latin, and Greek were represented by the same letter. Also, the V often became a B, and that's why in very early Greek representations of the name Yahweh, sometimes it's Yahweh, I-A-B-E. And that's confusion of dialect with the V and the B. There was no J in these languages, the J being a recent innovation that represents an I in the early languages. The Latin V being actually a U. Jove in Latin is I-O-U-E, which is the equivalent of the Greek I-O-U-E, where Josephus says it wars. Book 5, chapter 5, paragraph 7, Josephus tells us that the name of Yahweh in Greek is spelled with four vowels, and he must have had I-O-U-E in mind, with several slight possible variations, such as I-O-U, Ato, which is another vowel. Any of these are a fair transliteration of Yahweh. Job is plainly equivalent to Yahweh if you understand how Greek and Latin work. It has been discussed, and I cite a publication called the Oxford Encyclopedia of the Classical World, that Jupiter is a contraction of the Latin Jove Pater, and is the exact equivalent of Yahweh Father. It seems to me that the early Christian writers may have gone out of their way to avoid, in avoiding I-O-U-E or even I-A-U-E, in a conscious attempt to avoid connecting Yahweh with Jove, and probably for fear of the Romans. That's a conjecture of mine at the end in the conclusion.
Why would they have fear of the Romans?
Well, they would basically be saying that the Romans stole their high God from the Hebrews, right? And since the Romans were in charge, I'm sure they would have been offended. This is evident in Clement of Alexandria's I-A-O-U-E, which is how he spelled it, since he must have known of the testimony of Josephus, who distinctly states that the name could only be spelled in Greek with four vowels and not five. Four Greek vowels, because Josephus was writing and explaining in Greek. And the only way to spell the Hebrew consonants, Yod, He, Vav, He, in Greek is I-O-U-E, just like we see Jove and the Roman I-O-U-E. And therefore, I'm convinced that Yahweh is the correct name and pronunciation represented by the Tetragrammaton. And Jove is certainly a Roman remembrance of the name of their Hebrew God, because that's where they came from. But you shouldn't see Job in the Odyssey, technically, because the Odyssey is a Greek book, and Job is a Latin name. And the Greek, wherever you see Job, would say Zeus, which is the name that the Greeks used. So it always ruffles my feathers when I see translations of Greek classics employ Roman names rather than the Greek names. And yeah, Butler and a whole lot of good English scholars were guilty of doing that. I think the best translation and the most readable I've seen of Homer in English is probably Robert Fitzgerald. And I recommend that to people because it's very readable. And it's fairly modern, but he was faithful to the Greek spellings of names, and his translation, everywhere I checked, it was fairly faithful to the Greek, and it's out in paperback for like $12 each, the Iliad and the Odyssey. Robert Fitzgerald. And I thought they were very readable. For my own part, I prefer the Loeb Library because it supplies Greek and English. Well, Avenger, you know, it's all of the main events of the Odyssey and the P peoples, the historical peoples, are well accepted by all of the writers after Homer, but there's a lot of mythology mixed in with it. Poems were written for entertainment. They were written to tell a story, and they were written to entertain while they told the story. And the when you read those things, you have to have a mind that's able to separate the mythology from the truth. That's just the way it is. And there are some places that are going to be fuzzy. I accept the general events as certainly being true. And the personal details and the religious details as being the fiction and the embellishment of men's minds. Just like the Jews in Hollywood make movies today. World War II happened. Yeah, we fought the Germans. Yeah, we fought the Japanese. Everything else they say about it's mostly bullshit. And they put a lot of personal drama in the stories and stuff like that can't be substantiated. But the general facts are clear, right? That's the way I see the ancient poems, too. Okay, this is an open forum program, people. We got to have conversation here, or I can't run my mouth forever, and you probably don't want me to. I'm going to start playing Celtic Woman in a minute.
Hey, Bill, I don't know if you've ever discussed this, but on this, is it really expensive to get a TeamSpeak phone line type of thing, or impossible?
Well, I have no idea what kind of technology I would need to get a phone patch into here, right? And I imagine it might be expensive. I don't know. I would have to look at the hardware and the software.
Because I'm just kind of wondering, when we do that... with the other programs, and I'm kind of wondering whether it's possible to do that with TeamSpeak, just get ourselves a number.
Well, I've never heard it. I've never heard it done, and I don't know if it's possible. I'd probably have to change to a professional radio station software package for that. I would imagine it, and that is expensive.
Well, there's some stuff I do with conferencing where I know it is possible, but I'm just kind of wondering what. What would be, I don't know, I'll look a little bit.
Well, the beauty of this is it costs me $22 a month, right?
Yeah.
That's the server and the software, because the software is free, right?
Yeah. But it wouldn't really cost, if I put another line on my Verizon, it wouldn't really cost that much to do something like that, if I could do it somehow.
Well, right, but I don't think TeamSpeak itself has the capability to accept phone patches. And I don't know if any third-party vendors have done it. And then we have to think of the actual hardware required, because it does require hardware. And if it's hardware on a server, well, then I can't do it on this server, because this server is a remote server that's being leased. And I don't have enough bandwidth to actually host a server in my house, because the broadband here, maybe in Thornton, the broadband is absolutely wonderful, right? But up here, it's not that good.
I have a terabit per second in Thornton.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it, because it sure as hell felt like that when I was sitting in your kitchen uploading files.
I've never seen anything upload so damn fast in my life. I thought the cable was fast at the farmhouse.
I didn't know the file uploaded. I had to double check. I swear, 12 megabyte video went up. I never saw one go up that quick.
Yeah, I was loading some... Or just downloading some stuff here, and it takes forever at this 988, my address here in Delray Oaks.
It takes me 5 minutes to upload a 12 megabyte video here. It took less than 30 seconds at your house.
Yeah.
And there I would be able to host a server, but I can't. You have the throughput, you have the speed, but I could never do it here.
Yeah, you're missing all that good programming at my house too, Bill.
The best thing I saw at your house was Anna Sophia.
Oh, Kim. Yeah. Anna Sophia. Yeah, she's gone now. Back to college. She'll be back next year, probably.
Yeah. Okay, I'm sure I'll come in the summer. After school gets out. I'll have to paint my skin black, though. Maybe she'll pay more attention to me.
I don't know. That's the most disgusting thing I tell you. I'm surprised she wants to come back after I ragged on her.
You know, a Peace Corps worker was killed in South Africa, right? In the last week.
Yeah.
They shot them.
I don't understand, with all of the stuff going on in your own country, and this is the thing that's always bothered me about churches in general, even here, the churches I went to here, they were more concerned about all this crap overseas than taking care of first priority, which was your own community. That money should never leave your community until you satisfy the needs of the community.
Right, even from a common sense viewpoint.
Yes, it's the first thing that you do when you're in your family is go over to another country and hand over your hard work, hard-earned dollars to some pathetic piece of crap. And it's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And even worse, blacks that murdered all the whites on the island.
Yep.
Haiti. We're talking about Haiti, by the way.
And they would do it in a second anywhere else they got the chance.
Yep.
Rape Absolutely. All the women and kill everybody else.
They'll
and kill the women, too,
when
they were through weight raping.
Smile at you while you're handing them stuff, but, oh, you're so wonderful, you're so helpful. The second you're not useful. For rape and murder and pillage.
Well, that was my entire time in prison. I realized that as long as I had nothing for them, they hated me, and I was better off when they hated me. Yeah, I was always better off when all the Negroes and the Mexicans hated me and wouldn't have anything to do with me. And I was happy. And they weren't trying to take my stuff. The white guys that made friends with them lost all their stuff to them. That's the way it works every time. And I saw it over and over again. And it's the same pattern every time.
They're just sweethearts.
When they know they're going to get something out of you. But once they realize they're not going to get anything out of you, then their real self comes out, and they hate you. And I would rather have them hate me. Go away. Don't go away mad. Just go away.
They'll go away mad.
Nah, they respect strength. That's all they respect. They don't respect anything else.
Yeah, that's true.
If you stand up for yourself and get in their faces, they're going to back down and respect that. And they'll go away.
And quick discipline, too. They got to be quickly disciplined. Not like, you know, a year afterwards.
No, because they're like dogs. They forget.
Like that. They go to prison. They say, well, I'd be black. They'd be pissed to this. You know, it's because you did something wrong. They have to have swift punishment on those people.
They're just like dogs. They forget.
Yeah. It's my classic comparison is like beating the dog tomorrow for piddling on the carpet last week.
Right.
They just don't understand it.
No, they don't. Well, Robert, didn't you quote some kind of, was that you that quoted some kind of poll that found that Negroes don't think more than 4 hours out or something?
No, I think that must have been you.
No, it was somebody here within the last couple of weeks. I forget who.
Really?
I thought it was you.
It could have been me, but the problem is I probably forgot. I'm the absent.
Some kind of study or some kind of poll found that Negroes don't really think more than 4 hours out. And that's true.
I don't think most people think more than about 10 seconds out myself.
Right. That's, hey, you know, I'm going to sleep with this blonde, and her husband's going to come home and shoot me. Well, all they care about is the first 10 minutes, right? So they go sleep with the blonde. And if the husband shoots them, well, what the hell? They'd rather sleep with the blonde.
The ones I can't figure out are these Mexicans. What do they got going on in their head? I don't know. They drive like they are the most brain-dead group of people I have ever seen in my life. They're just in the way.
I'll tell you what would
really get frustrated is the Germans. I can just imagine a bunch of Germans over here in Monterey. They would kill the Mexicans because they're just freaking in the way all the time, going 1 mile an hour, hitting every damn light because they're too freaking. It takes like 10 seconds before they figure out the damn light's green.
I always had the biggest problems back in Jersey with Oriental women and Indians.
Well, they're terrible too. Oriental women are real slow and erratic, but the Indians just run into everything in total cars.
They're not accustomed. They don't have, in their history, they don't have the automotive comprehension like we have since boys. We've always seen cars and seen steering and gas pedal and brake and the red light and traffic and how to move around. It's sort of we've already learned before we even got behind the wheel what to do. But these Mexicans and stuff, they come up from Central and South America and things, and from India, they never saw a car. The only car they ever saw was somebody else, and they were walking, and a car went by about 25 miles an hour because of the bad roads. But down there in San Diego, where you live, they cross over the border there, and they'd go run across the freeway. They didn't understand that the car's doing 80 miles an hour, and a lot of these people get run over because they didn't comprehend the time and motion and the speed of that car, how long it takes to get across an 8-lane freeway. They just get run over. So they don't have the comprehension of the mechanical aspect of automobiles. That's the only excuse I can come up with is why they're so stupid and they can't drive well. It's because they don't have it in their, not their genes, but it's in their entire life history from childhood, like we do.
I prefer to believe that it's the synapses that just aren't going. Yeah, it's like me in aircraft. I'm always in. I tell you, when I was flying planes, it was always difficult because I started late, and I was always kind of like envious of my buddy Gunta because he could just freaking take me. And I have another friend too that was started flying when he was like 11 or 12 years old, and they can just take the airplane and just put one wheel on the ground, stick the other wheel on the ground, and bounce it all over the place. And I'm lucky if I get the damn thing down without crashing.
Well, it's a privilege I never had.
Oh, you can move, Bill. It's not that big.
Trying to fly anything.
You can take lessons now for nothing. They're not that expensive.
I was flying a few times when I was young and stupid, but it wasn't on an airplane. I'm kidding.
To get free airplane lessons, you got to have a long towel wrapped around your head. How's that?
Oh, there you go. It's always easy to take off. The landing's the hard part, right?
Really? It's like jumping off the cliff. It's when it stops. That's when it hurts.
I don't even know if they'll let me on a plane.
They'll let you on a plane. Why wouldn't they let you on a plane?
That no-fly list.
Oh, you're on the no-fly list?
I don't know. I know they were putting everybody on it back 5-6 years ago.
I was on the molest list there for a while.
Really?
Oh, getting molested.
Every time you get in there, he's got to give me a pat down.
Oh, I see that one, yes.
I started complaining. I said, what the hell is this? Every time I come in the airport, I'm on this pat down list. Oh, no, it's just totally random. I said, it's not freaking random. The last three times I've been in here, you pat me down. How the hell is that random? Get 40,000 customers through here, and I get patted down.
Well, I flew a lot on business in 94 and 95 when I was working for the Lawn and Garden Equipment Company. And I flew back and forth to Toronto from Newark about 20 times in 2 years. And I flew back and forth to Dallas and Detroit and Atlanta. And even going to Canada, I guess you'd think it was sweet now, but I mean, I never spent more than 15 minutes in the terminal. Yeah, you know what? I'd go park my truck and have my tickets ahead of time and be on a plane 20 minutes later.
Good luck.
Get off. Yeah, I know. I don't even know if I ever want to try to fly again, even if I can. I'll just drive. If you want me to come to California, I'm just driving. I'll stop at a few places on the way.
Well, California is worth a flight, but, you know, from your place to my place, sometimes I would take Philadelphia-Boston flights.
Yeah.
Heck, I'm almost inclined now to take the damn car because it's such a pain in the ass in the airport.
It was 1984, 1985. I had a second job for a place that refined gold. Yes, Jews owned the place. And they wanted me to go to Boston for something. And actually to make a delivery of some bullion. They wanted me to fly. You want me to fly to Boston? Are you crazy? By the time I drive to Newark Airport, park the car, get the tickets, get on the plane, and fly to Boston, and get off the plane, and rent a car or get a cab and go where you want me to go, I could have been there already if I just get in my truck and drive to Boston. You know, ain't no way I'm going to fly to Boston from New York. It's a 3.5-hour drive.
That's what I do from here. When I'm in Monterey and I have to go to San Diego, I freaking hop in the car. By the time I get through Monterey Airport, get into LAX, then take either a car or another plane to San Diego, I could have been there when I wanted to with my whole car filled with stuff rather than go through all that airplane security stuff.
Right.
Yeah, now I could imagine flying from New York to Boston must take 2 days. And to Toronto, you could get a damn passport now, right? I never needed a passport. Just my driver's license.
You got to go to business class with everything you don't get through, and that's expensive.
I imagine it would be, especially since I was always making flights on 2 days' notice, you know, and you're paying a lot more for tickets.
They're just a killjoy. They even had to kill travel now.
Yeah, they did it. They did it, and they did it. They did 9/11, and they killed our travel. And they've kept people that do travel in a constant state of fear.
It still amazes me, with all the information out there on 9/11, that still nothing, absolutely nothing, has been done. Zero, zip. Shows you nothing's ever going to be done on it. It's not going to be done until Yahweh returns.
They just ignore it. They just ignore it. Somebody sent me an email today with all the list of yeah, you know, all the indictments against Obama, the missing records, what records he should have because he went to this school, he went to that school, he did this, he did that, and he has none of these records. They've supposedly uncovered 20-something Social Security numbers attached to Obama's name over the time of his life.
Yeah.
And it's all... nothing will ever be done. If one of these indictments, one of these charges is true, he should be in prison. Nothing will ever be done about it.
No. Nothing will ever be done. You'll just keep on fighting and keep on talking, and nothing will ever be done. Not against any of them, unless they want something to be done. And Barney Frank is the perfect example. That guy should be in jail, and there's other people that have done lesser crimes that are in jail.
There was he had a roommate doing a child molestation ring right in his house.
Yeah, I know.
And excused himself out of it. How do you excuse yourself out of that? If that was me, my ass would be in a slammer so fast, I wouldn't know what hit me.
Yeah, you'd be in that predicament that, what was that high school guy you were talking about the other night?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah?
Yeah, he could get away. Oh, I didn't know he was doing it. Yeah, right. Okay. That's incredible.
You don't even have to do anything today.
No, unless you're one of them.
That's why we're
being run, that this nation's being run by a crime ring. It's blatantly obvious to anybody that just opens their eyes and looks.
There are three individuals, I still don't know what the hell happened to them. No? That I knew. And I'm like, what the hell happened to these guys? What did they know or what did they do that they ended up in a position where they disappear? And then, of course, I told you the two Jews showed up in their positions.
Yeah, right.
The third one, I don't know what that was about. I think that was a political.
Yeah, it's incredible that this country is being run by the world's... Well, it's the world's oldest crime ring anyway, but it's a blatantly open crime ring, and nobody's doing anything about it.
But I don't know what you can do about it. That's what I'm trying to... You know, I just don't see what you can do except for speak up.
That's why the Bible says there is not one righteous, not even one. Look at our government. There's not one righteous man in government, I swear. If there was one righteous prosecutor, all these bastards would be indicted.
Yeah, sometimes I think a couple of them do try, and then they just get railroaded. Next thing you know, they're on the tabloids.
Well, cowardice is a crime, too.
Well, it's not necessarily cowardice. It's just that they get railroaded and they end up in the ring. It's like Christopher Bolin, right? You know anything about him?
Well, they ran him out of the country. Yeah, I know what they did to him.
I mean, he was really speaking out. The next thing you know, he gets attacked by the police, and it's police brutality. And then he was the one that got convicted of attacking the police.
Right.
That's incredible. Beautiful. I can't ever imagine that guy attacking the police, though. Never heard from him again.
It's kind of crazy when the cops are out in front of your house to attack the cops, right? I mean, that's really suicidal. Yeah. That's really dumb.
I tell you what, though. At first, I didn't believe that he had actually been, quote, kidnapped. But I'm pretty convinced of it now. He's I've never heard from him again.
He was on one of Eli's programs.
No, personally.
Okay. Well, he's in Estonia.
Yeah, right. He's wherever somebody wants him to be.
He called into one of Eli's programs last summer, and he was from Estonia. He was calling
in
from
Estonia. Yeah, that's what he's saying, but there's something fishy going on. I've never been able to contact him again personally with anything that's really reliable. But
okay. Well, I have his email. I spoke to him on the phone.
Yeah, I have his email, too, but it doesn't go to the person. It doesn't go to him. You spoke to him?
Last year, yeah. I didn't know the guy. I only spoke to him in conjunction with Eli's program, right?
Okay.
He was worried about the cost of the telephone call, and I paid for it. I guess he doesn't have a whole lot of money or something. I don't know. But I wanted him to make the appearance on Eli's program, so I forked up the $25 to cover the phone call.
We'll have to talk about that at a later time. Like
his first wife is an Israeli. I don't know. I don't know the guy. I read some of his Spotlight articles back in the early 90s, and I thought they were good. And Eli said he could get him on his program, so Eli had him on his program, but he had to call from Estonia, supposedly.
Maybe they.
I got the email somewhere.
They could have shuffled the phone lines around so it sounds as though it comes from there. Maybe been somewhere else.
Well, there's pictures of it, but it's very strange that this is a guy I was personally in contact with, and disappears. I try to get in contact. I got the last email I got from him. And was even more than personally in contact with him. I mean, he just completely freaking dropped out. And at first I thought, okay, he's taken off and he's on the run a little bit right now. But, after 6 months, you begin to wonder, well, what does that mean? It's gone. I mean, I'd never heard from the guy again, so I wouldn't think he'd call to be on a show with Eli before I would be able to have another conversation with him, something like that. I've seen him on a couple of programs. But they're always strange programs.
Strange meaning?
Well, that's probably why he was on Eli's program. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, good thing.
There's no sensitive personalities around here, huh?
there better not be. We should all be thick-skinned. The trip that it took us to get here should give us thick skin, right? That's the way I look at it.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, come on, guys, say something. We can't, two of us can't talk all night, or three of us can't talk all night.
Here's something I want to ask, and I'm looking around here.
Somebody's sending me the biography of Benjamin Netanyahu. Who cares? And it's from a Jew named Barry Commission. Somebody forwards it to me. Netvision.net.i. Who cares? They're all criminals. If he's a Jew, he's a criminal. I mean, so what? One biography is the same as another. I just deleted it. I'm not even going to read it.
Yeah. I think the only way to send stuff to you is to point out in the text of the email where to find the subject that is so important in this entire book that you're sending.
Yeah, it was a long email. The biography of Benjamin Netanyahu, like I should care. He's a criminal. He's a Jew. He has to be a criminal.
So when there's a rabbi, there's already been a crime. And when the Jews, there's a criminal. Therefore, when the rabbis were the Jew, that's a conspiracy.
Well, when there's two Jews together, that's a crime ring. When you see two Jews together, you're watching a crime ring. A rabbi with a cell phone, that's another crime ring.
You know, I haven't had a good dream again lately, Bill. I'm really sorry to say this.
Good dream.
After my snake dream, I had a snake dream.
Oh, yeah.
All the snakes.
Yeah, the snakes eating all the shoppers at a mall.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. Occasionally I have these dreams I got to write down just so I track of what's going on. I think it was I had that one because there was too much CI stuff going on. I had the snakes attacking the whites. Very symbolic.
Well, that's what they're doing. Every mall in America.
Well, in the meantime, here I got all my backups done.
Sending that debt overseas.
What's that?
Every mall in America. That's all they do. They're outlets to send debt overseas.
Yeah, foreign-owned companies, yeah. Yeah, and these malls, well, they have all the high prices.
Everything in them is made in China and Korea and Malaysia and...
Mm-hmm.
I came home. I couldn't find any clothes in the mall down in Binghamton made here. Not anything. I came home and went shopping for clothes online. I found clothes made here.
You know, the stuff doesn't last either. That's what amazes me. I mean, I remember having clothes for years and years and years before I got fat. And that stuff would just keep on, you know, you keep on washing and washing, it would stay together. Before you get like a couple Costco underwear things now, and they're in shreds. About a year and a half.
Well, I found a company that makes blue jeans and T-shirts and stuff like that, and the stuff's all pretty good, and it's cheap.
Yeah, it's a local.
Well, they're made here. I mean, it's they're in the Southwest somewhere, I think, New Mexico or Arizona. They're probably made. I mean, they probably got a factory full of Mexicans, but at least the stuff's made here. If I could buy clothes real local, I would. I bought New Balance sneakers are made here in Massachusetts. The better ones are, the more expensive models are, and I got a pair of walking shoes that are made here and a pair of Carolina boots that are made here. But it's harder and harder to find stuff made here. There's no doubt.
Yeah.
And what's amazing? Now I got a story. I bought the best pair of shoes I ever owned in my life. They were like walking on clouds. They were floor shine, and they were just like leather deck shoes. And I bought them probably around 92, right? And I paid like $150 for them, but they were worth every penny of it. And I went to the same mall in Woodbridge, New Jersey, to the same store, and they were made here. And I went to the same mall, to the same store 3 years later. And I wanted another pair of the same shoes. And I found them, and they looked the same, and I picked them up off the rack, and I turned them over, and it said that they were made in China. And I said to the store guy, I said, I bought this same pair of shoes 3 years ago. They were made here. And he just shrugged his shoulders at me. And I said, and now you make them in China, and you still want $150 for them. There ain't no, I put them down, I walked out. That's just crazy. If they're made in China, they should be $40 now, not $150. The Jew is pocketing the entire difference.
Yep. They're getting wealthy off of our poverty.
Yeah, right. They're not, they're making the stuff over there for pennies on a dollar of what it used to cost here. And they have a slightly increased shipping cost, but they're not lowering the prices. They're pocketing all the difference. In fact, I bet in some cases the prices probably went up. Look at the jeans. Levi's moved all their blue jeans operations overseas, and they haven't lowered the prices. They're still $40 a pair.
Yeah. There was a place where they made Maytag washing machines up north from where I live here. And they just closed down and said, we're going down to Mexico, put a whole town out of work. And I was talking to someone who understood the history of that. And some people that owned it sold it to some bigwigs for a high of a dollar. And then the bigwigs took over and fired everybody and folded everything up and took down to Mexico. And I can't figure out why it is that when any company goes out of business, goes to Mexico, it's one thing if they go out of business, now they're broke. But when they fold up and go down to Mexico or to China or something like that, why is it that some guy who's working on the floor out there and works his ass off suddenly gets pissed off, drunk, goes over there and says, boss, if I'm fired, you're fired too, and bang, there goes his brains out the backs of his head. Why don't they beat these CEOs and presidents and all these decision makers and make them feel it? If they have enough of that, assassinations, murders, and physical terrible beatings of people who decide to go out of the country with this stuff, maybe they'll think twice before they go next time. Other companies. But I don't understand it. They're so patient.
Well, they're just getting the low-level people anyhow. You know, that's the problem. They're never getting the people who were the instigators of the issue.
Well, that's true. But if you go to the president of Maytag, let's say, and say, you know, look, you took me out, I'm taking you out.
Yeah, but if he's not a Jew, you didn't get high enough. If you're not getting a Jew, you're not getting anywhere.
But that's true. That's true.
The place I bought my jeans, I got about 10 pairs of jeans from this place. It's allamericanclothing.com, and their headquarters is in Ohio. And they're pretty good. The jeans are great. I mean, I beat the hell out of them, right? And they hold up. I just thought I'd mention it in case anybody else wants to abandon Levi's.
Yeah, really. Or you can go to thrift stores. But even they're getting expensive.
Well, this place is actually cheap. I mean, $35, $40 for a pair of pants.
Oh, jeez. I'll go to a thrift store and get them for like $6 to $8. I can afford that.
But they want in these department stores for when I came home clothes shopping, I couldn't believe the prices they wanted for cheap garbage made in China in the department stores.
Yeah, and people pay it. And they pay it like it's some badge of honor to pay out $50, $60 for a shirt that I get down in the thrift store for $4 and it's been washed 5 or 6 times. And I can wash my brand new $60 shirt 5 or 6 times. And it looks exactly the same.
Right. You know, I got a bunch of just pocket T-shirts from these people, and they're like $7 or $8 a piece. And I've been wearing them for 2 years, since 20 months since I got home, and they're still pretty good.
Yeah.
Praise Yahweh, he made our jeans, huh?
Yeah, right.
Made in Yahweh.
Yeah, they should strip all those people that move their companies of their citizenships to China.
Yeah, I told myself I'd never buy a pair of Levi's when they moved all their plants to China. I mean, I wish I had Levi's. I left home before I went to prison.
Yeah, I'll be walking around the truck stop waiting to get a shower sometimes, and I'll see all these, I'll just poke around at some items, and I'll look where it's all made, and absolutely everything, made in China. When one time out of maybe 80, you'll see something made in the USA, I'll go, whoa, what's this?
And it's not much.
Yeah, like a foam sponge.
Yeah.
Yeah, they destroyed the industry in this nation.
But you know, one...
And we have our stuff to thank for it, because we bought all the shit.
Yeah, but one thing you don't always notice is that if our economy fails, then China's economy fails.
Yeah, right, but I don't think the Jew... I think the Jew's betting against that, right? And it's inevitable that they're going to fail, because they're not going to buy their own garbage. They have no use for it. Those 1.8 billion people in the rice paddies have no use for all that trash we buy.
It's amazing. You look at the pictures, though, of China, how advanced they are. If it wasn't for the fact that they had funny-looking faces, you'd think it was America somewhere.
Well, now, yeah, but they're only advanced because our investment money from our 401k plans has built all that.
Yeah.
And we've taken all of our technology and sent it over there and installed it into new factories the same way we did Japan in the 50s.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought the Jews did that.
Well, yeah, right, but we have to take the blame for it because we helped them and we bought the shit. So I say we, and I'm not wrong. The Jews did it? Yeah, well, they're responsible for it. They were the chorus leaders, sure. But I'll bet your IRAs have purchase some of those overseas stocks, developing a economy.
I don't have any.
Well, I'm sure you had some at one time. You had a Navy pension. Most people with IRAs or any kind of retirement plan in this country will find that they're heavily invested overseas, and they've helped fund their own destruction.
A lot of times with investments, some people don't know. Well, the investment, like a mutual fund, you put your money in mutual
funds. Well, that's why the Jews love IRAs, and that's why they love mutual funds, because people don't know what their money's invested in, and the Jews can do every vile thing they want to do with it and get away with it.
Yeah.
And then you end up with organizations like CalPERS controlling industries.
Yeah, really. And you know who runs the education department and who runs the unions?
Well, of course.
So I'm just shuffling the cards to get a deck.
So we've contributed just as much to our own demise as the Jew has, because if we didn't embrace the Jews and his ways, he wouldn't be able to do this to us.
Yeah.
He wouldn't have been able to destroy our company, our country, and move all
so those
of
us
manufacturing overseas.
The proselytized, yeah.
Well, come on, guys. If anybody has anything to say, turn your microphone on, darn it. At least I got 2 hours out of tonight. That's better than 20 minutes.
Oh, I was looking for that. Something to rattle your cage about, and I can't think of what it is.
When does Clifton's next teaching letter come out, Bill?
He just emailed me two teaching letters yesterday to proofread.
Oh, good.
They'll probably get proofread on Sunday.
Is he still on the marriage and divorce? And remarriage?
He's going to be on that for the next 20 teaching letters.
No shit. Sometimes I think it's too much time spent on that subject to be better addressed.
Well, his point is that too many people in identity don't understand it. And you know something? He's right. Too many people in identity don't understand it.
Yeah, it's all about the relationship with Yahweh through Israel, and that's all.
That's the whole story of the Bible. It's definitely the most important theme in the Bible by far. It's evident in every single prophet. It's evident in every single gospel. It's evident in every one of Paul's letters, just about. Paul talks about it in Romans 7. He talks about it in 2 Corinthians 11.
Revelation's full of it. Not, you know, of the marriage relationship.
Well, Revelation 19 and 20.
Mm-hmm. The bride.
You got your whole, you got a whole bunch of turkeys that try to claim that Judah wasn't divorced, and all people have all kinds of misconceptions about this, the marriage relationship.
You know, I like that troublemaker guy.
Troublemaker? There's a straight clown for you.
Did anyone find out what his name is?
Yeah, his name is well known.
I never heard of him. I mean, like
Russell
the real
Walker.
Oh, okay.
And Johnny Walker's brother, right?
Yeah, that's a name heavily used by the Jews, Walker. Hello, John.
Oh, hey there, people.
Bill, if I'd have known it was going to be this late tonight, I'd have come up with some more topics.
Oh. You know that, Bill, I heard Bill talking about Ephesians where Paul was talking about being alienated, that word that Bill was talking about, that we were never really aliens. We were, that word that King James used, alienated, means we were temporarily cut off, right?
Well, I feel like a blasted alien in this world.
But I mean, the King James Version words are just so out of place in so many ways in different places. It's just boggles your mind when you look at the original Greek and the heart of what Paul was eating in the spirit.
Mercado, yeah, you know, a lot of people confront me with 1776 when I talk about the fact that we were to obey our governments as explained by Paul in Romans 13 and by Peter in 1 Peter chapter 2. And they say, well, what about the rebellion of 1776? Was that evil? I've been confronted with that question before. And you know something? The children of Israel wanted a king. They screwed up. Yahweh said they would be punished for 7 times. Daniel gave visions of 2,520 years of punishment. The Revelation gave visions of 2,520 years of punishment. And Christ only came about 700 years into that punishment. And there are other prophecies that state that after 2,520 years, we would be free from that series of empires and the two beasts that Daniel 7 and Revelation 13 discuss. And that's what happened in 1776. In 1776, we entered into an era of self-rule, which other European countries also did when they broke free from the monarchies. And that's our lesson now, that even though we're ruling ourselves, we're still going to be subverted and taken over by Satan. And the end lesson in all of this is that the children of Israel can have no king but Yahweh. They rejected him in the days of Samuel, and it's going to take all of this for them to realize that they were wrong in rejecting them, and that we can only get along with Yahweh as our king. We rejected him 2,500 years ago, and now we're going to beg to have him back.
I remember reading, and I haven't searched it out, that Cornwallis, the surrender at wherever it was that he surrendered, that he told Washington something to the effect that in 200 years, the Jews will own America or control America. I mean, I'm just really paraphrasing it.
Well, if you said that, it's in fact, they had already owned England at that time.
And that may be why he said what he said.
But
actually,
aside from that,
I've heard that. Supposedly said that.
I've heard that statement often, but I've never seen it cited or documented.
Okay. I may have to look around.
I'm sorry. I missed what John just said about it.
He was saying that Benjamin Franklin said something. And last week, I put in several paragraphs of the Franklin quote on the chat room there about how in Charles Pinckney's notes, who was a delegate to the Constitutional Convention in 1789.
Well, I've heard about that quite often, too, but I've never seen it documented.
For Cornwallis?
Or the Pinckney notes. I've never seen it actually documented or cited.
Yeah, so the Pinckney people won't show the documents one way or the other, so it can't be proved or disproved. But even if it was not in his notes, and even if Benjamin Franklin did not say it, the words on themselves stand as true.
Well, but we have a lot of people in the so-called truth movement and in identity who like to go back and revise historical events and make claims for documents that happen to fit our situation today, but that don't make it right.
Well, Bill, I've got this quote from George Washington. Now, he talked about this black, he used the term black gentry instead of Jews, but they took it for saying that he meant Jews.
Yeah, well, if he indeed said the word, he probably did.
I just put what I had from Benjamin Franklin into the file browser.
Was it the chat room there?
Yeah,
I think you go to chat. Benjamin Franklin at this convention.
Yeah, I just put that file in there. That's the only thing I have on it, and that's somehow survived my computer crash.
Now that's just the name. That's not the text. There's only one line or two lines there.
Well, I don't know. You open it up.
It's in the file browser. You go to download the file.
Yeah, you go to the top. Oh, okay. The main top on the main there. Do a right click and then open file browser, and you'll see it up there.
Well, I see.
Hey, Bob, you put in that it was 1789. I got it here. It was before the Constitution in 1787.
Well, this is what I had. I pirated this from someone else. So I've never verified that it's correct.
Yeah, I'm looking at the back cover of Paquita de Chishmaris' book, Waters Flowing Eastward. I'm not sure if it's accurate either.
It's a start. Someone's interested in pursuing it.
Well, so many people are interested in creating lies about the past to justify. That we were warned about our position in the present, and all the warnings I need are in the Bible, and I'm skeptical about a lot of so-called revisionist history and claims made of ancient documents when people don't actually have citations from old books or PDF scans of pages of old books or something to substantiate their claims with.
Well, Bill, I have a warning from that. What was that, Rabbi of Kimor in, what is it, it's something like 1400s, he wrote to the people in Spain, or the Jews in Spain, to adopt the way of the Trojan horse. And Paquita de Chishmaris does have the original documents in these old Spanish books from that. She has a photostat in there.
In ballpoint pen.
No.
Well, no, but that's a... At least an effort to document the claim, right? I mean, that's the way it should be.
Well, that's the beauty of the Gospels, that Yahshua really exposed the principalities and powers and spiritual wickedness in the high places through his death and resurrection, exposing these Edomites. It all confirms the learned elders of Zion is like to the T as far as the crossing of every I of what's been going on.
I also have in this book, what is it, page 158 or something, Mr. Stepanov's deposition about the protocols and how he obtained them. It's the original photostat in Russian, and I showed it to a Russian lady, and she read it for me. And it does say what it says. So, and he made this deposition back in 1927, and it was witnessed by Prince Dmitry Golitsyn and maybe one other person to verify that this is how the protocols, how he obtained the protocols back in like 1897.
Yeah, right. Well, the protocol, the legitimacy of the protocols of Zeon are self-evident, right? Even if you didn't believe that they were legitimate in 1897, you gotta believe that they're legitimate today, because that same agenda has succeeded in every place, in every country in the world where there was a Rothschild bank, and in the countries that didn't have Rothschild banks, they were bombed and mortared and attacked until they got Rothschild banks. So the legitimate, it may not have been self-evident in 1897 that they were legitimate, but it sure as hell is today.
That's what Ford said. That they were right then, and they're something about they were valid then, and they're valid now.
Well, right, they're more valid now than they were then, because all of that stuff we've seen it all fulfilled with these social revolutions and the upheavals of the 20s and the 50s and the 60s and the 70s, and it never ends. That same war that the protocols describe against our race, it's absolutely evident now. You don't even have to be a Monday morning quarterback to see that.
Well, Bill, I mean, Paquita showed this this photostat of this note, this deposition, and compared it to the one in the book, which in the Spanish book called La Silva Curiosa, and that was a letter from the Grand Sanhedrin of Constantinople to the chief rabbi of Spain in 1492, and there was a hermit of Salamanca had found this while he was researching ancient Spanish documents. And she has the photostat of this this in Spanish right here. It's interesting.
Yeah, I guess that would be pretty interesting. That's pretty good. But that's if you can come up with these documents and the original meaning of archaeology was the study of ancient documents, right? That was the original meaning of the word. And that's what scholarship is. And there's so much stuff on the internet that's spurious, it's ridiculous, and I'm skeptical of most of that. I just read these Franklin words, these alleged Franklin words from the Constitutional Convention. It's probably the second time I read them. I'm not an expert on Franklin by any means, but I have sitting in front of me, I'm looking at it, the biography of Benjamin Franklin by Carl Van Doren, written in 1936, but a lot of that, about half of that, comes straight from Benjamin Franklin's own incompleted biography, autobiography. And the words that from the convention, that they just don't sound like Franklin to me. They don't sound like language that he would use. Even though we'd like to hear him, we would like to believe that somebody said that, made that warning in 1789. It's too late now in any case, but I have a hard time perceiving those words as Franklin's.
I've heard other people say the same.
Van Doren had commented on those words, too. He didn't repeat them, but he commented on certain quotes that Franklin had about the Jews that people attributed to him that he didn't believe were legitimate either. Now, let me say also that, Franklin did have some personal experiences with Jews and did not have anything good to say about them. But he, as far as I'm concerned, he didn't say anything like the paper job, the quote Bob just put up in the file area here about the Jews and warning that they should never be allowed in this country.
Well, I mean, so, Bill, what do you know for sure that he did say about them?
Well, he talked about particular individual Jews and how they were parasites. You see, there was Franklin had a little mishap boarding a ferry in New Jersey to cross to Manhattan one time, and he actually got dumped over the side. Yeah, you know, at that time a ferry was more like a rowboat, right? And he actually got dumped over the side when he had a misstep, and some Jew helped him out of the water. And every time the Jew saw him after that, he'd ask him for money and remind him about the time he helped him out of the water. It's pretty funny. And then Franklin saw the Jew's widow, and the Jew was dead, and the widow was trying to shake him down for money. And Franklin's
well,
like,
they owe you if you save their life, you know.
Well, exactly, and that's, you know, and Franklin didn't have anything good to say about that Jew, that's for sure. It was pretty funny. I forget his exact remarks, but he basically said he was a parasite, and he was never going to let him forgive this incident. Every time he saw this Jew, he had to relive the whole thing. And he said he could have very easily helped himself out of the water. So that's, you know, that's one thing I do remember Franklin explicitly said about the Jews. He said something about America that I'm going to quote on the October 10th program. Yeah, you know, Franklin actually extrapolated how many Saxons he thought could inhabit this continent in a short time, and how quickly the Saxon population would outgrow the Saxon population in England if left to its own devices here and left to be free here. And he actually planned a North American continent for Anglo-Saxons and not for anybody else. I mean, he wrote about it at length and speculated on it at length and wrote about it glowingly, thinking it was a great idea. He was definitely a racist in the sense of one who would favor the growth and success of his own race. There's no doubt. And you know something, another thing about Franklin, one more angle I got to think of with Franklin and the Jews, is, you know, Franklin was the grand master of the new, I'm probably going to butcher this pronunciation, the Neuf-Sirs Lodge in France, the Masonic Lodge in France. Franklin was the grand poobah. The Neuf-Sirs, it means the Nine Sisters Lodge, right? Now that's not that wasn't the Grand Orient Lodge that the French Revolution came out of, but Franklin knew a lot of those people, and as far as I could tell, I don't think Van Doren would lie about it. Franklin didn't write anything bad about the Jews in the Masonic Lodges, and the Jewish, and he had the hobnob with a lot of the Jewish literati in France while he was the Grand Master of this Neuf-Sirs Lodge. And I can't imagine him hobnobbing with these people and not saying anything about them if he truly perceived them as evil. Yeah, you know, but there's no, there's nothing about that. That's a whole blank slate in the Van Doren biography.
Well, Bill, let me tell you about my own similar experiences with the Jews. I mean, I've had, like, half my friends were, like, something like half of them were Jewish at one time, probably. And they, until I came across the 9/11 incident and researched it myself, I was still very cautious because a lot of my friends were Jews. So, but then I started feeling them out, and I realized they're lying, too. I mean, like, at least a third of them that I could test. And so it's a gradual thing. And he may not have gotten that far, you know.
Now, there's one more thing I have to say. No, I'm wrong. I'm sorry. I'm wrong. Franklin was at the Constitutional Convention in 1789. It was Jefferson who was not.
Another one that
because Jefferson was doing his turn as ambassador to France at that time.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Another one, I was surprised to see this. You'd think Patrick Henry would want to just, you know, bust his buttons trying to get in there. But he wouldn't go. The House of Burgess nominated him, which is like the House of Representatives for Virginia. And he wouldn't go. He said, I smelt a rat. Sure enough.
Well, the rat was a lot of those men believed that the Articles of Confederation was the way to go.
Well, a lot of them thought it was true, and it would have worked just fine if they'd have gotten a little more cooperation from the states in supporting the government of the United States, interacting between the states. But they were too busy taxing and burdening every interstate to travel with all kinds of taxes, and very, very jealous, all like a bunch of European nation states. So they decide to have a convention to be able to resolve some of these problems of the Articles of Confederation and Perpetual Union, which was working just fine, except for the fact they couldn't get these guys to pay their dues so that the government of the United States could do their job. And so they had this convention, and it turns out they went out there and came up with this this constitution rather than the confederation. It was a constitution. And nobody appointed them to rewrite a whole new government. Nobody sent them in there to say, oh, come up with a whole new constitution. No, they said, go in there and just fix what needs to be fixed. Don't create anything more than that. And they come back with this seven articles of this constitution for the United States of America. That's not what they were sent to do. So, and look what happened. The big fear was that the federated government, not the confederation, but the actual federal government, would then somehow be turned into a dominating force over all the states, and that's exactly what has happened. Howard Freeman pushed this idea, and it's some of it, he says, is kind of bunk, but a lot of it's true, where this Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 and 18, which talks about need for rules and such as that for the United States, they've expanded that out like a cancerous tumor, and now that, and along with the 14th Amendment, dominates all the states and supposedly all the people. And Patrick Henry apparently saw this as a threat to the actual establishment that they really wanted to have, and he said it wouldn't go. And he said, why do we the people, when they wanted to ratify the Constitution, they talked about the preamble, we the people. And he says, why we the people? Why not we the states? Because, you see, the United States of America is not the United People of America, it's the states united in America. And that's all. It's not the United People. And that's one of the
problems. Who was the first president of the United States in reality? Do you know?
The first president wasn't George Washington. It was, I have his name around here somewhere. It's very obscure and hard to know. I have it, though. I can't remember what his name was.
Depending on how you count, it's either Peyton Randolph, John Hancock, or Samuel Huntington.
One of those names, I think. I haven't got it in front of me here, but I know that it wasn't George Washington. Yeah.
No.
If
you count from the first Continental Congress, it was Peyton Randolph. If you count from the time that the Declaration of Independence was signed, it was John Hancock. If you count from the time that the country was actually recognized as independent by the English, it was Samuel Huntington.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. Yeah, I didn't know all that, but good up.
Well, I didn't. I knew it, but I had to look it up to get all the names right.
Did you just go online?
I didn't have the Peyton Randolph name in my head.
Where did you get that information?
Stuff slips through the cracks. It's right on Wikipedia.
Okay.
The only names I had in my head were the John Hancock and the Samuel Huntington names.
Yeah.
Some people count from Huntington because he was actually the first president of the Continental Congress in a United States that was recognized by England as being independent because England had signed the surrender. Okay, but if you go by the time the Declaration of Independence was made, then you have to say it was John Hancock, right?
Yeah, and oddly enough, there's four different declarations of independence, and we have to figure out which one is the binding document. There was they never called it the Declaration of Independence; it was just called the Declaration, and when you look at the the minutes of the meetings that they had, it came up just as an ordinary course of business. They didn't all of a sudden gather together and decide, well, today we're going to declare independence. It was part of another bill that came up, in the Congress, and they debated it and then voted for it on July 2nd. And then John Hancock and Charles Thompson, who was the Secretary of the Congress, they signed it in the name of the representatives. And then they took it down to, I'm thinking it's Lathrop and Dunlop, I'm not sure.
And that's the same Charles Thompson who translated the Septuagint.
Yeah, yeah. And then they took it down and had it printed. And they put Charles Hancock and Thompson on the bottom there in print. And then there was they came up with a handwritten version. How did this go? I have it in my mind.
Think about it a second. Let me say hello to Mike. How you doing, Mike?
Okay.
Profane. Hello. Well, you wanted to talk, so say something, darn it.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Hello, Mike.
Hello.
Hello, guys. I'm sitting here. I'm on my first ever run by myself in a big old semi-truck at a truck stop right now, so I'm finally making some shekels.
Great. That's good. I'm glad you made it. I'm glad you passed your test. Congratulations.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah.
We were wondering about that. We hadn't heard from you.
Yeah, I had the mother-in-law at home all weekend, and then I got to work today at 1 and checked out.
I'd rather be in work. I'd rather be off in the truck, to be honest with you.
I'll tell you what, I like it a lot better now than I did during training, because when I had to ride with somebody else, they didn't give us a double bunk. You had to put a cooler in between the front seats and lay across the front seats. I didn't get any sleep, so now I'll actually be able to sleep in a bunk, and I won't have to smell some stinky-ass trucker sitting next to me.
Yeah, I could imagine.
I'll be the only stinky trucker in here.
Well, that's great. So where are you? When you coming to New York? You need to run to New York.
Yeah, the company I work for, they deliver mostly paper products, like paper rolls for all the Jewish magazines and stuff. So they only run basically from northern Wisconsin down to, like, Illinois, Missouri, Indiana, Michigan, and Minnesota. I'm actually headed over to Minnesota tomorrow morning, so.
Too bad you can't pre-print some of them before you deliver them.
Jews did 9/11 a big old black marker on every roll.
Have some secret code in there.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, Mike.
Yes, thank you. I got other ways I'm getting a word out. Like I said, this the paycheck I'm getting is secondary to the cause I'm doing right now.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's great. Paper, that makes sense. Upper Peninsula in Michigan delivering paper. I guess there's a big pulp mill business up there, right?
Yeah, there's huge lumber stuff going on up here.
There's probably not much else up there. One lumber, and that's about it. Some mining.
Hold on, I got to figure out a way to get my headphones on or something. I can't hear anything right now. We're like in a huge rainstorm right now here.
Well, you concentrate on driving, brother.
Yeah, concentrate on driving. The hell with us.
There you go. So anyway, the Declaration of Independence, after they had signed it, the handwritten on July 2nd, they had it printed on July 4th, I think it was, and then they sent it around, another handwritten version, to have all the delegates at the or the representatives at the Continental Congress to sign it. Well, between July and August, there was an election, and some people that voted for independence did not get their seat back, and a new person came in. And some people that signed the Declaration of Independence, where they had all the names, even the popularized version, the handwritten, with all those names, some of them took office and didn't vote for the Declaration of Independence, but they did sign it. So it's kind of a convoluted circumstance there. And then there are some books out there, one of them is called They Signed for Us, I think is one of them. It discusses the history of all the people that had actually signed or voted for the Declaration of Independence. And a lot of them lost their houses and families and everything like that. They really sacrificed a great deal. But technically speaking, there's four different kinds of Declaration of Independence out there. And the Constitution, same thing. There's two of them. One of them was a handwritten and hand-signed by the delegates that was sent to all the states. Then there was another one was a printed version, and which is the binding document. If you get down to splitting hairs, well, what's the difference between the handwritten and the printed if it says the same thing? Well, when you're hair splitting, the only question left is which side of the blade are you on? And so it's interesting to find out some guy actually knows which is the best one. But there were four Declarations of Independence and two constitutions.
I think there's actually five. Obama has a new one.
Yeah.
And we have two national anthems, too. I got some email where they had some memorial service or something like that. And some Negress gets up there, and he said, no, the national anthem. And she sang some weirdo thing that had nothing to do with the national anthem. It was completely different.
You know, that was on YouTube, and that was actually kind of the best part of her singing was not the singing itself, but the comments in there. I mean, they just raked her black butt, which should have been done
in person. Should have been done in person. I'm surprised the cops there.
What should have been done is some of those soldiers should have gone up there and just whacked the shit out of her.
Well, they go to jail for that. The only way
too bad.
The only way you can overcome that is to just bust out singing the real national anthem. That would crush it there.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're never around when this stuff happens. It's always happening to somebody else.
Yes, most of these, they tell you that national anthem's that damn Queen song, right? I mean, that's what you would think it was. Jews got everybody convinced they're the champions and they're the biggest losers in world history.
Yeah.
Well, they're doing a pretty good job right now, Bill. Mike's going to take care of him with his big truck.
There you go.
Hey, don't tempt me.
How you doing, Israel DNA? Israel DNA's from Australia.
Well, yeah.
I guess he just made it here for the first time.
Good.
Greetings. So what's up? This is an open forum. Come on. I mean, let's say something. We keep running out of... Yeah, that's fine, Israel DNA. I understand. It's probably pretty early in the morning over there. Well, we keep running out of steam real easy here.
Well, we're not going to next week because I'm going to come up with a whole bunch of topics.
Why don't you come with your brother? That'd be fun.
I can't get him on here. He's scared. He thinks he's got it all figured out. He's just too damn arrogant. Everybody I talk to has got it all figured out. They don't want to talk to you.
I think he's scared. Tell him I said he's scared.
I told him. I'm going to. You wait. I'll get back there. I'll egg him on somehow.
What's he going to do when he meets me? I mean, you should have him. You should bring me over there one day when I come down.
Yeah. Well.
He has to run away.
He's not intimidated by too many people, but he's not awake.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Just tell him he's afraid of the Jews.
Yeah, well, I was even more concerned about trying to get that preacher man I was with there. That didn't work out. I mean, just all we need is one preacher man. That would wake up some people. They never do.
Well, they come. They're few and far between, but they come.
Well, you got Greg, right?
Yeah, well, Greg was trained to be a Baptist preacher.
That's what I mean. So it is possible.
Well, the latest one that I know that actually had his own church... He's from Indiana, and his name's John Harness. And he's not two seed line, which is a problem, right? But he's new to identity, so the jury's still out. And I'm hoping to work out a way that I could confront him sooner or later about the two seed line thing.
I think you got to recognize the deviousness of the Jew before you can become two seed line. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense.
Hmm.
Right, Viracato. When white people suffer natural disasters, we don't sit and piss and whine and moan about it and wait for the government. We just get off our asses and fix our houses and fix our roads. And when Negroes and Sumatrans and Orientals and all these other people have natural disasters, they sit around and piss and cry and moan about it until idiot white people send them money. And nobody sent the Iowa flood victims money. Nobody sends white people money when there's natural disasters. It's crazy. We're the most suicidal people on earth. Our race is mad. Right. We're trained to believe that the other races are the same as us, and it's just a big lie. Now, Pro thing, Scott, that Iowa versus Haiti video on his website. It's the best short little thing to show somebody about that. I mean, Ron Uniker sent me pictures of a bridge that was cluttered with houses that washed down the river. I didn't hear anybody from Iowa crying.
Yeah, it took FEMA something like a month or so to come down in 2008, and then they say, well, we'll be back in 2 weeks to let you know what we think we can do for you.
Yeah, right. Well, when New Orleans went, they were giving all, they were giving every Negro that came by a credit card for $4,000, right? Here's your Hurricane Katrina debit card. It's free.
Yeah.
Oh, you had to see. My landlord was furious today. He just went to the Safeway up the street to grab some stuff. And he goes, you can't believe what was in front of me. This is this big, fat Mexican woman with every kind of thing in her hands, marshmallows and candy and all kinds of stuff. And she gets up to the cash register, and it was they weren't able to take her electronic fund transfer card for welfare. Furious.
Yeah, it's incredible. Well, you know, the Muslims in the Netherlands are doing a hell of a lot more damage than this earthquake could ever do. I'm trying to find a good article on it.
Looks like ProThink dropped.
Yeah, well, he said it was raining, and he's on one of those mobile cards, too, but it seems to work better than most of them here.
Well, he's a high-tech guy, you know.
Yeah, well, I can't. A lot of people have those cards and have problems. You know, Michael in California, he gave up coming here, I think, because of that. And Gerald has one of the big satellite providers down south, Wild Blue or something like that. And it's terrible. No Israel DNA, I haven't heard of Olive Tree Ministries. And Avengers in South Carolina, he has some kind of AT&T mobile phone dongle for his cell phone dongle for his laptop and plugs it in to get on the internet, and he has all kinds of problems. Well, the crowd's dropping off. I'm probably going to shut this down at midnight. 10 more minutes.
I got to write a note on my calendar here to make sure I harass you next week. Got to come up
with
some
topics. That's fine. Somebody's got to carry this program.
You know, my first topic is going to be Ezekiel 38 and 39.
It was a lot busier here when I was at Pacho with this program, right?
Well, I think the one advantage is what I was saying. If we could set up something where it was telephone accessible. I used to do that sometimes with TalkShoot when the audio was just crappy. And that may be, I don't know how to do it, but it may be a solution. It would be nice to have our own kind of TalkShoot type environment.
Well, I would like to have that, but I would like to have, my own control of it rather than being dependent on a TalkShoot or a blog talk radio. But when we looked at packages, this was free. We could set it up cheaply on an inexpensive server, which is where I'm at, and it was free. So it did everything that we would need it to do except telephone.
What does TalkShoe cost? Do you know? If we started up our own TalkShoe thing, how does it? It just makes money from advertisements, right?
But we also run into the dropping off that seems to happen. I gather is exclusively with. With Bill and Eli James, we're put off after.
Well, I'm tired of talk show. I don't want to go back to talk show with this program. This program will not go back to talk show. Now, this is 100 times better than talk show, technically. Yeah, Israel DNA, first problem she has is confusing the Israel and the Jews, right? That's a huge problem.
Huge lie.
She looks like just another website running cover for the world's oldest crime ring. Holocaust could happen again, warns expert. Well, it never happened the first time.
Well,
the Holocaust never happened the first time.
But which Holocaust? There's so many in history.
The last Holocaust I know in history was the post-war Holocaust. And the fire bombings at Dresden and Hamburg that all happened against the German people. And the only Holocaust I know that was immediately before that was the Holocaust of 30 million white Christians in the Ukraine and Western Russia at the hands of the Jews who perpetrated it. I don't know of any other Holocaust in 20th century Europe.
Well, there was that's true. In the late 1900s, they had the Boer War, where they really started, the British started the idea of concentration camps and in starving people, the Boers down in South Africa.
Yeah, right. That was a Holocaust against the Dutch people of South Africa.
And then because of the diamond mines and the gold mines. And then, there was the Irish famine, which is most people that are Irish believe it was contrived. It had nothing to do with really a potato blight. It had everything to do with the fact that they just took all the cattle off the land and took all the food off the land and left them with absolutely nothing, took it to England. So there was the Irish Holocaust there. The Armenian, the Turks, the Jewish Turks, attacked the Armenians and murdered many, many of them. That's still a sensitive issue between Armenia and Turkey. There's a book about that.
It's the same kind of BS that barnyard burly banker Bernanke made up when he said, if we don't just accept this bailout money, then there's gonna be trouble. And if you don't accept our 6 million kikes being gassed, you're gonna get gassed. I mean, that's the kind of insane doublespeak that the devil uses, right? Injects fear into the gullible.
As long as they're watching television and getting their hypnotic effect,
not enough stress could be laid on that, can it? To get away from that damn thing.
Well, okay, I'm going to end this program. Thanks everybody for participating, and this is William Fink and Krista getting a forum call. And it's another Monday. Good night.
Okay, thanks, Bill.
Good night.
Yahweh bless.
You going to bed
praise
now,
Yahweh.
Bill?
No, I'm not going to bed. I'm just ending the program.